This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2. The week's best bits. Laura and Duncan's Hope Breakfast Podcast.
Slap your underpants on the outside, whip on a cape, and go faster than a speeding
bullet. Hang on a second. Just bring it down a notch. We are having an excited sighting podcast this week. We're going to hear from Dean Kane, but I really would prefer that your underwear remain on the inside.
But I've only been wearing these 2 days. They're pretty clean.
I don't want to see it at all. But Dean Kane, as in Superman from Lois and Clark, is on today's podcast.
Do you think he'll also appreciate our thoughtful thoughts?
I hope so.
They're deep.
It's all coming up right now. Ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1.
Breakfast is ready.
The Socceroos played Brazil in a, well, I mean, let's call it a friendly, but it's not really that. I mean, we are a juggernaut of a soccer nation going up against potentially another juggernaut in Brazil. Listen to just how the first 12 seconds of soccer unfolded.
So off we go in Melbourne, a fixture as tough as they come for Australia.
Go Australia.
Not least because, as Andy Harper's already mentioned, they've lost once in this tour already, and they've scored incredibly.
Good job.
In 12 seconds.
So did Australia score in the first 12?
No, that was Brazil. You need to understand the background here, okay? Brazil had just lost to Uruguay, so they were obviously feeling low. And what the Socceroos did was they let in an early goal to give them some confidence. Oh. Then they let in a couple more goals to allow Brazil to really start to feel confident in it. And then in the second half, they let in another goal to make sure Brazil really knew that they still had the ability to play soccer. Obviously, Australia is still a far superior soccer nation.
So even the old I'll let you win phenomenon.
Well, that's it. You know, Brazilians, they're touchy-feely guys. They don't want to get down about it. You know, whereas Australia have thick skin. So what we did was we lost the game on purpose for nothing.
Hope Breakfast with Laura and Duncan.
Superman may not have the bat signal, but this morning we've got him on the show.
Yeah, Dean Kane, you know him best for playing Superman in the 90s series Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. He also hosted Ripley's Believe It or Not, appeared in God's Not Dead. He has over 140 acting credits to his name. Dean is going to be in Sydney this weekend for the Supernova Pop Culture Expo. Dean, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm extremely happy to be on the show. I pretty much love everything about Australia, so we're copacetic here.
We'll give you about 5 minutes to cut that out, Dean.
No, I've been. I was in Sydney and Melbourne back in 1904, and it was a blast. I had an absolute blast, and so I love Australia, and I know a lot of Aussies. And there's only, you know, of the hundreds I know, there's only like one that might have ever offended me.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, a lot is going to have changed between 1904 and now when you come visit Sydney. Mostly, of course, the fact that so many are going to be coming to see you at Supernova. Do you love these kind of comic fan related events for yourself?
Well, I got to tell you, when you're shooting a show and you're on air, you know, on set 18 hours a day, and you're making a television show, or television show is what mostly I'm known for. So when you're doing that, you don't get any response from any fans, from any people. You don't know how things affect people. And here we are, you know, 20 odd years later, and I get a chance to meet people and hear how the show affected them, what they thought of it, how it might have affected their life, their family, their happiness, their escapism, how it might have inspired them. And it's amazing because you don't get any of those sort of responses while you're doing the show. So I really, really enjoyed getting out and meeting fans and hearing what they had to say.
Do you reckon you would have gone down the entertainment route had you not had that early injury in your sporting career all those years ago?
Yeah, I absolutely would have ended up in entertainment. My father's a director. My friends all were, you know, guys who became very famous actors. Kids that I grew up with in Malibu, California, you know, Sean Penn, Chris Penn, Rob Lowe, Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez, Holly Robinson. I mean, we all grew up together. And so it certainly lends itself to me being comfortable in that world. My dad's a director. My mom's an actress. I grew up on sets. I would have ended up there, just not as quickly. I didn't expect to be there quite so soon.
Well, we're certainly glad you didn't.
Okay, I got a pitch for you, Dean. In 2013, you did a movie called $10 Million Bigfoot Bounty, okay, where if someone could prove that Bigfoot exists, they got $10 million, right? Great show. Now, I want to do a pitch.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, for an Australian version, right, called Drop Bear Bounty, because no one has ever survived a drop bear attack, so we can't confirm their existence in Australia. Would you do the same show out here?
drop bear attacks that you drop as you're being attacked by a bear?
Have you not heard of a drop bear? It's the fabled dangerous koala in Australia that falls out of trees on unsuspecting tourists and murders them.
I have not heard of that. I absolutely do it as the show host.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think being the host is the way to go.
Exactly. I'd like to be comfortably ensconced inside a cage of some sort with a lazy boy and a television and a glass of wine and see what happens to these people.
This is perfect. Now, of course, you did mention Lois and Clark, The Adventures of Superman. That was obviously quite a few years ago now. There is an opportunity, though, for you to come back as an older version of Superman in a comic, for instance, like Kingdom Come. Would you consider doing that?
Oh, I have no problem with that whatsoever. What I really am hoping for, honestly, is because Lois and Clark ended in a weird way. We ended because Terry Hatcher got pregnant in between seasons 4 and 5, so we ended up not shooting season 5, and we left the show on the weirdest note. So what I would like to see happen is for us to get a chance to either do a 2-hour movie or a 6-episode arc to sort of finish that off, and it would be really interesting. We've never seen... you know, Superman 20 years later. I would love to see that and see some of the things that might have happened between Lois and Clark and whether they have kids and what sort of things they're facing. I think that'd be amazing.
Oh, I like that. Now, let's talk Lois and Clark for a second, because you're coming out for Supernova and you're going to get fan questions, okay? So we need to do some show prep for you.
Okay, yes, sir.
In season 4, episode 4 of Lois and Clark, entitled Soulmates, you go back in time with H.G. Wells to lift a curse. What was that curse?
Holy smokes. I wrote a couple episodes of Lois and Clark. That was not one of them. What curse did we go to lift? Wow.
Someone is probably going to ask you that.
You've got to do some practice before you get here, man.
I got nothing. I'm usually the guy asking the questions. Holy smokes.
All right, here's an easier one for you, though. What happened to the suit in Lois and Clark once it wrapped? Where did that end up?
Well, here's the deal. Since we were supposed to go for a season 5, I was completely convinced that we were coming back. We were told we were coming back. They gave us a TV and said, hey, here's a big screen TV, which, by the way, back in the day weighed like 9,000 pounds and was 7 feet thick. These are great. We were supposed to come back for season 5, so I didn't steal anything from the show. I didn't take a suit. I didn't take anything because we were coming back. Had I known that was it, I would have pilfered everything. But I did not. I did not grab one. I've seen a few of them pop up here and there since, and I want to take them when I do see them. It feels like putting on my football uniform again.
Yeah, you like the rest of us, we'll have to try find one on eBay somewhere.
I'm relegated to that. I can't do any other way.
Yeah. And Dean Cain, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you at Supernova.
Thank you. Come on down and visit.
Thoughts. It is Thursday, and it does mean it's time for us to ruminate over some major ponderations.
Ruminations and plums.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And so as I plumb the depths of the milky knowledge that is the goo inside my head, I bring you this thoughtful thought, Laura.
What are you thinking about?
If your birthday was 6 months ago, you would actually be born 186 million miles away on the other side of the sun.
Because the Earth spins, but it's also rotating
around the sun.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're space travellers. I'm an astronaut.
Yes, you are.
I am claiming that. Here's my thoughtful thought for you this morning.
Lay it upon me.
Okay. So, do sheep get static cling when they bump into each other?
Oh.
Because you know when you're
wearing...
Because
they're made
of wool. Yes. And when you're wearing wool, it's a little bit electric. I reckon they suffer with the same issue, surely.
And why then would shepherds wear woolen jumpers when they're in the paddock tending to the sheep?
Such thoughtful thoughts on this Thursday.
Hope Breakfast
with Laura and Duncan.
We can't deny it as much as you want.
If you're going to sing in front of thousands, I think it'd be daunting for anyone. But 17-year-old Hosea Parch, he is nailing it on The Voice. Hosea was born in New Zealand. He was one of four. He said on the show that he really found school difficult, and he believed that music was the only thing at which he excelled. And it really is true. Hosea is now just one of two remaining contestants on Team George, making it through the blinds, the battles, and now on to live shows. Good morning, Hosea.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. We've been loving your auditions, loving everything that you're doing on the show. And of course, you did choose Team George. Why did you originally jump on the show in the first place?
The reason why is because I love to sing. I thought this could give me the chance to give back to my family and just use this God-given talent. So I thought The Voice would be the place to do it, so yeah.
Man, you had some choice for who you were going to pick for teams, and you went with Team George. Why did you pick him?
I'll be honest, I had Kelly in mind at the time, but I definitely felt like George was the man for the job. He's just a person that just knows his music. He's very down into earth. I just love the man. He's my boy now, man.
What have you learned from him so far?
Well, growing up, I was a shy person, and I was a bit shy to sing in front of people, and he's helped me to come out, you know, and just sing out with confidence, you know, and I'm just so comfortable on that stage now and just singing in front of people.
Yeah, now, Jose, I'll be honest, how many times have you said to him, "You're my boy, George"?
I think I've said it like twice or three.
I'm guessing, does he find it funny?
Oh, yeah, he laughs every time I walk in. I'm glad he likes it, too.
That is cool. And you mentioned your early interest in music on the show. Tell us how you originally got into music and why.
I was growing up, I was surrounded by a lot of musical family members back in New Zealand. I have family that, you know, write their own music and, you know, who are pretty well known around New Zealand. You know, it all started in church for me, just singing with church and, you know, Sunday school and choir. And then just growing up, you know, I just fell more in love with music. And, I just knew that music was the thing that I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Right. Now, I'm a child of the 90s, so I grew up with 90s grunge and metal. What's the music that you like to listen to?
Oh, man, I'm a full reggae person. I love my gospel. I love my reggae, you know. Bob Marley is someone who I've listened to ever since I was a baby.
You got a line. Can you sing us a little No Woman, No Cry?
No woman, no cry.
Yeah.
No woman, no cry.
That's awesome. I love it. Hosea, thank you so much for joining this morning and all the best with the rest of the show.
Yeah, thank you very much and thank you for having me. God bless the both of you.
The week's best bits. Laura and Duncan's Hope Breakfast Podcast.
And everyone wants to be the cool auntie that all the kids look forward to hanging out with.
Yeah.
But what makes you the cool auntie? 1-300-40-2020.
And look, I'll take advice from cool uncles as well, because I have a need this morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am auntie, like unofficial auntie, to one of my best friend's little boys, okay?
Yeah.
So there's no blood relation, but I still feel that need to be considered the cool auntie because my sister and I are both aunties.
I feel like I'm growing up with this kid because I see new photos of him daily.
Yeah, I have way too many photos of other people's children in my phone.
You are always over there hanging out
yes,
with this kid.
But the competition has begun between my sister and I as to who is going to be the cool auntie. He's fast approaching 1 year old.
Oof,
so it's
okay,
early days.
Yeah.
She reckons, my sister Natalie, she reckons she's going to be cool auntie because she said that she's going to give him ice cream before he's like 5 years old. I don't know about that because I know that his
it's
family.
Put the parents offside.
Yes, they want to make sure that he's eating veggies and eating healthily.
It's a dangerous play.
So I need to know what I can do, because if I don't do ice cream, is it just quality time that is my option? 1-300-40-2020. What is it that makes you the cool auntie, cool uncle? I will take advice from anyone. Morning, Jackie. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are a little bit little at one, but yeah, probably wouldn't be introducing ice cream. But keeping track of the five love languages.
Oh, yeah.
Gary Chapman. If you want to understand how to have a relationship with anyone, but especially a child, if you understand their love language, then you can give that language to them. So whether it's a little gift or words of affirmation, or quality time, then you can invest the right method of loving them. So then you get your full reward, if you want to use that word, and then the child get their love cup filled.
Ooh. Yeah, that's really special, Jackie. I do actually like that thought. And because you do need to make sure that it's the right one, because if their love language isn't gifts and I'm forking out gifts, I'll be very disappointed.
Well, other end of the spectrum, or I guess it might be a love language. Alicia takes her nephews to see the circus and they love it. Ooh.
That's fun. Brian, how do you win over the nieces and nephews?
Be natural. Be yourself.
I like that. Now, why do you say be natural, be yourself, and not buy him a bunch of ice cream?
Don't be an imitation. Don't be, just, because kids see right through you, believe me.
Yeah.
If your love's not genuine, they'll see that. They're just playing games, they'll see that right through it, believe me.
Thanks, Brian.
I like that.
Well, I do have genuine love for my unofficial nephew, so I think we're going to be in good stead. I'm going to win Favourite Auntie of the Year.
Got to learn that love language.
You know the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why. You would have heard of this. So it's a story about a young girl who is considering suicide. And she's essentially she vocalises tapes to the people in her life that she feels are one of the reasons why she's done this. There's 13 of those reasons. Makes sense, given the title. Yeah. We are joined this morning by Marina from Beautiful Minds. Now, there's been news of a second season for 13 Reasons Why that's meant to be coming out. And Marina at Beautiful Minds is very intent on tackling the issue of suicide and making sure that as parents you are resourced. Good morning, Marina.
Good morning to you both. How are you?
Going very well. Now, a lot of parents will have heard of a show on Netflix called 13 Reasons Why. It's been announced that there's a second season. What do you know so far about the second season?
Well, Laura, they're alluding to the fact that Hannah, who's the main character, comes back for the second season and sort of takes the gang through a bit of a process of, a few issues that she feels that they haven't learned lessons from, moving forward. There are a couple of storylines that are not quite finished, and so we'll definitely look at where Clay is and where a couple of the members of the group are, once the story wraps up.
I feel as a parent, you kind of scramble on miniseries like this. Something comes up about self-harm, then as a parent you're scrambling to find out more about it. Why are children turning to self-harm?
Look, I definitely agree with you. I think parents are definitely scrambling and, sometimes, the more that we look at the forbidden fruit, the more it becomes attractive for young teens to actually watch. And I think, when it comes to parents, they're very confused with the issues that our teens are facing today when we're looking at suicide, when we're looking at self-harm. There's so many different layers to what they're struggling with. And parents are at a total loss of, is their child doing it? Is their child potentially going to do it? And how do they actually help them moving forward?
Because with 13 Reasons Why, one of the criticisms of the show was that it glorified suicide a little bit. And if you're right in saying that they bring Hannah back, well, then that kind of confuses the conversation because there's not that sense of finality that obviously that kind of decision has with it. But it brings with it some interesting conversations about what is happening in the minds of young people and why suicide might be something that they are considering. For you and your team at Beautiful Minds, what are your tips to parents to help combat that desire?
Look, first and foremost, parents need to have conversations around these issues. So when we look at suicide, it's a permanent decision for a temporary pain. So how do we actually help young people with this? And I think with parents, one of the most important things is keep checking in with your young person. When it comes to moodiness, sometimes it's not teen hormones. We need to look at things like, is our child potentially depressed? Or are they suffering with anxiety? And don't just brush it off as teen hormones. Also, I think it's important for us to remove the stigma. So when we're looking at kids that are struggling with self-harm, when someone self-harms, they're in a lot of pain. For them to take a blade to their skin, what is going on internally for them is really, really quite shocking. So, by cutting, they have a couple of seconds of relief from the internal pain. Mm. And it is a mental illness, and they do need help with it. And I think the great thing about today's society is that there's so many, so many places that parents can turn. We always have our phones at Beautiful Minds at the ready for any parents that need help. And we're all about how to place young people in care so that we can move them to a place of happiness and health.
Yeah, Marina, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you both. Have a great day.
Thank you, Marina. Listen, if you want to find out more about that, especially as a parent, sometimes I feel like I have to react to what my kids are doing. You can head along to beautifulminds.com.au.
Hope Breakfast with Laura and Duncan
on Hope 103.2.
At 7:10, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be joined by Superman, Dean Cain. Cannot wait because, of course, Superman is the best superhero and I'm looking forward to chatting with him.
What? Superman is the best superhero, except Batman beats him in the comic books, has way better movies, and doesn't need superpowers from another alien planet to make him good.
Excuses. 1-300-40-2020. Who do you think the greatest superhero is? You can make your case. We know it's going to be Batman. Slip of the tongue. It's going to be Superman. 1-300-40-2020. You can get on the text line 0448-40-2020. Superman will be preferenced. Hey, Paul, who do you reckon is the best superhero?
Take Iron Man, let's take Batman, let's take Ant-Man. They're all vigilantes.
What? How can they be vigilantes?
They don't have superhero powers.
So to make you a superhero, you've got to have superpowers?
Well, generally that is, I guess, a factor. But I do agree that Iron Man and Captain America, they're quite up there. Hello, Edwin. What do you reckon?
Captain America is the best superhero.
Captain America in the comic books, like, dies, like, 12 times because they don't think he's very good. Why is he the best superhero character?
Well, if you look at his history, he started off as a scrawny kid.
Yeah.
And he only got the serum because... As he says, he never gave up. He was only chosen because of his characteristics.
Exactly.
Edwin, listen, I think he is a very utterly lovable character, but yes. He got a serum. Batman went and worked out, you know?
1-300-40-2020, your favourite superhero. Good morning, Jake. Who do you reckon?
I think Batman.
Yeah. Thanks, Jake.
Excuse me, what did you say?
Batman.
Well, now, why do you love Batman so much?
Because, like you said, he doesn't need powers.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. And he's got really cool gadgets and all that.
Sorry, Jake. I think your line's actually breaking up. I'd have to move on. I misheard. I'm pretty sure Jake said Batman when actually what he meant was Superman.
We didn't have a single phone call about Superman. How unusual.
Hi, Breakfast.
With Laura and Duncan.
Do convicted criminals deserve a second chance? Following the two-year anniversary of the Bali Nine executions, Australian producers Ben Field and Paul Neveson, they've announced a new feature film project called Finding Mercy, telling the story of convicted Bali Nine drug trafficker Andrew Chan. The film is currently in pre-production. Ben Field joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hello. So what was your connection to the story of Andrew Chan?
Well, I think like many Australians and towards the end of their life, many people around the world were taken by the news articles that were coming out in the lead up to their executions. And, you know, for me, a couple of days after the executions had happened and the bodies had come back to Australia, I just remember seeing in newspaper articles, front pages with Andrew and Mayu's picture and stories of courage and hope and faith towards the end. It really struck me that this is an amazing story that isn't told the way that the news had picked it up. We did some investigating and made contact with the family, and at that time they had been talking about what could they do to keep the legacy of Andrew's life alive, and especially the untold story. And so we've been working with them since to develop the story and the screenplay for this film, which we're due to start shooting next year, which is pretty exciting.
Ben, one of the things that I noticed about this particular story was this incredible story of redemption as opposed to kind of the story of responsibility. Here is a man redeemed by the blood of Jesus, but he's still held responsible for his actions in smuggling drugs. How did you kind of grapple with that?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the whole legal process that those guys went through over the 10-year period was an interesting one. And, you know, at the end of the day, they took accountability and responsibility for what they had done. I mean, they were convicted drug smugglers. You know, they were caught with 8 kilos of heroin in Indonesia. So, you know, if the law is black and white, they're definitely being punished for their crime. Mm. But, you know, within that, they found faith and they found hope and they found a reason to live beyond that. And I think what's remarkable about this story is that, you know, Andrew in particular, along with Mayu, they were fighting for life imprisonment. They were looking for clemency just to avoid the death penalty. And towards the end, once they had found a new purpose in life, the hope that they found through their faith, they're actually being a great asset to the prison system. And like every prison system around the world, they want rehabilitation. They just don't want people serving their time. They want to change lives. And these guys' lives were truly transformed, and many testimonies to that transformation. So this film really delves into the question of, you know, do people deserve second chances? Do we give them room to live out that second chance. And when a life is having as much impact as Andrew Chan's did inside the prison, why would we execute people like that when it's having such a profound impact on so many other lives?
But I can't help but feel that this is kind of like a modern-day Saul to Paul. You know, I'm in prison. Yeah. I'm just going to preach in prison and convert everyone in prison. What was the most powerful moment for you in this story?
I think seeing Andrew's faith lived out through his works. You know, Andrew became a pastor and he did run the local little church, you know, in the prison. He rebuilt it and started running classes and baptizing and things like that, which is remarkable. But he loved on people. And I think that was one of his greatest things, was that he, you know, in a corrupt prison system where, you know, there's meth labs, there's drug labs, you know, within the prison system, and worked a way to get those out. And here, Mayu created painting classes, and Andrew created Bible studies and computer studies, and started to educate the prisoners. They were doing the work of what every prison system aims to do around the world, which is to truly rehabilitate prisoners. And, you know, apart from that, you know, towards the end, he led the people that were executed, you know, on that field, singing 10,000 Reasons and Amazing Grace. And they held their heads high and they walked into knowing what was ahead of them, which was their eternal life.
Ben, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much, guys.
That's Ben Field, co-producer of Finding Mercy, the new film telling the story of convicted Bali Nine drug trafficker Andrew Chan. For more, you can contact Ben via ben@appletreecollective.com.
Not every time you give birth to a baby, it happens where you expect that it is going to, which I would assume is the hospital, okay? You don't want to be...
It's where we'd all like to do it, or maybe a home birth with a, what are they called, a doula, a mama?
A doula? I thought you just needed a bathtub.
You need a bathtub, but you have a doula there as well.
Okay, so a mum in the States, she didn't know she was pregnant. I still don't know how you can't know you're pregnant.
How do you not know?
It's the first medical mystery right there.
Scratched my head.
Second of all, she ended up giving birth in a supermarket. So she's just buying her bread and milk, suddenly feels this pain, gets the staff to come and help her limp to the bathroom. Thankfully, she was in a supermarket that had a medical center attached to it. So they're able to go get someone who could help deliver the baby. But there she is. Imagine like your Kmart bathroom having a baby. Thankfully, her baby was okay. And everyone was all right.
Did she have to take an item out of her basket so she could still use the 15 items or less?
1-300-40-2020. Did you give birth in an unusual location? Morning, Jan. There was something unusual about your pregnancy.
Well, I could have been that lady in the bathroom had I have not had the flu and gone to the doctor. And she said, you're awfully big.
Oh.
And I already had an 11-month-old baby. And I said, well, she said, do you think you could be pregnant? And I said, well, I suggested it to the specialist. And he said, it's all in your mind. Go home and forget about it. So I did. She said, do you mind if I check it out? And she said, I think you've got 2 months to go. You better go and book in.
No!
2 months to the day, with one contraction, I had my fourth child.
Oh,
had I not got the flu, I could have got the shock.
So there was no other markers to let you know you were pregnant?
No movement, no morning sick, nothing.
Oh, my goodness, Jan.
From my third child.
So that last 2 months then must have been pretty hectic for you preparing to have your fourth.
In total shock and telling my 11-month-old, get walking.
That is unbelievable.
Where were you born, Jackie?
Oh, kitchen floor.
What? What happened?
Well, my mother was very young. Nobody knew she was pregnant, and she was home, you know, just doing what teenagers do. I don't know. And she went into labour, and her brother was home, and he sort of thought, Struth, what's going on? And he ran and got the neighbours, and there was a baby.
Oh, my goodness. So did you have someone, like a medical professional in the end to help, or was it just family helping out?
The neighbours. I don't know what happened.
Now, yeah, Jackie, had the kitchen floor just recently been mopped?
Well, I hope so, because if it's anything like my kitchen floor, it's pretty bad.
The week's best bits. Laura and Duncan's Hope Breakfast Podcast.
Duncan, people do clean their floors, okay? You're not meant to ask that question.
Well, I just, you know, I know that it's going to get wet in there when a baby comes out.
Just stop. It was bad enough the first time, okay? Enjoy the podcast.
Placenta really stains.
Ew.
Have you seen the uterus juice? It's unbelievable.
rate the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time. I'm never having children.
See ya. Hope Breakfast with Laura and Duncan, 6 till 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with life words. Subscribe to Hope 103.2's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.